When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Walking Dead, Dead City, Season 1, Episode 5, Stories We Tell Ourselves, is over. But we're just getting started on telling this story to ourselves. Here on Post Show Recaps, it is I, Jessica Leese, and most of our panel got eaten by the zombie Rat King. So this week, just holding down the fort, is me and Chappelle. We're going to sit down on top of this pile of rendered fat, and we're going to talk about everything that happened in this week's episode of Walking Dead, Dead City. Chappelle, how are you doing?
I'm good, but we do have to talk about the rendered fat. That was so random to me. It's like, oh yeah, this is fat. Really? Why? Like, why are we doing this to Walking Dead? I enjoyed the episode, and I'm excited to talk to you about it.
I've gone on record as saying this is the grossest Walking Dead there has ever been.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Zombie Rat King, as you called it, is the perfect name for what the hell we just saw. At some point, The Walking Dead has now mutated the zombies to where there's multiple walkers in one. They got multiple heads popping out of each other. So we're doing it here. So if the rendered fat wasn't enough, the piles of zombies, but now the multi-headed zombie Rat King.
Yeah, the zombie chimera. Is it a chimera, maybe?
Is it?
I don't know what to call it. It looks like I feel like there it wasn't like Krang from Ninja Turtles. Didn't he look kind of like that?
Yes, actually. I don't know if a chimera is a good fit because it more like looked like it had multiple arms too. You know,
yeah.
It was a lot going on in that zombie. And I'm thinking The Walking Dead hasn't been, like I said before, it hasn't been scary to me forever. Like in the beginning, it was like jump scary. I've had a couple jump scares in the last few years. But this was like genuinely unsettling. Like it was just like the whole time I was like, should you be walking on that? Should you be touching that? Are you gonna put that mask on? Would you lay there? Why are you climbing on that? The whole time I was just like, I feel like y'all should be inside of a bubble or something like that because this is so gross.
Yeah, is this maybe the dumbest thing anybody has ever done on The Walking Dead? Is while you are walking through the sewers where the dead bodies are stored, just decided to have a little sit down on top of the dead bodies.
Just laid on top of it. And I'm sitting here yelling at my screen, what are you doing? Since when has this been okay? I understand that you think these zombies are immobile or, you know, they cannot move. But why would you risk that? Why would you risk the zombie just waking up and just touching you? I don't know how I feel about that. This is stupid. Also, with the methane gas and stuff, you're really going to take a break. Like, I get you can't breathe, but taking a break right there, you might not be able to get back up. I just don't think that was a great idea.
Yeah, there's two things coming at you right now. You got the methane and you got the zombies. And you got to know, if there's a big pile of dead bodies that didn't go through and like, really, there's no quality control in zombie apocalypse. Somebody's not checking to make sure they're all fully punctured.
Right. And would you risk it? You know, even if you felt so confident, how confident are you that you would just go sit on top of the zombies? It just doesn't make any sense to me.
I honestly wouldn't do that anyway. Like, even if I knew they were not going to get up, it's gross. It's
how
just
desensitized
gross.
Are you? Yeah, if you got to the point where, like, yeah, I've been doing the zombie thing for a few years, it's fine. It's a chair. No, it's not.
No. I'm surprised nobody has made furniture out of the zombies.
Like zombie upholstery or something like that. We did see cloaks made and kind of like masks and stuff. But I think at some point, yeah, like a zombie furniture wouldn't be out of the question. Like a zombie area rug, maybe.
Zombie Iron Throne.
Yeah. Yes. And that's the kind of vibe I was getting here too. Like, you could just piece these zombies together and make a seat, but just take all the heads off and the arms. You know, it's just zombie corpse body part, but no talons, no fingers, none of that, no teeth. And yeah, you could have okay, but just to lay on top of these things and assume that they're dead was a choice, to say the least.
Yeah, highly, highly questionable. I feel like when they find the artwork made out of the baby doll parts, was that foreshadowing the zombie Rat King?
I don't even know. So they mentioned that, oh, like maybe it is artwork. And I thought, that doesn't look like art to me. I don't know. Maybe your view of art changes in a zombie apocalypse. You know, things look a lot more grim than you could probably find the beauty in those things. But I felt like something like that was too far. I don't know if you've ever seen that island of those those dolls. have you ever seen that?
No.
So there's an island of haunted dolls, Jess.
I'm Googling this right now.
I'm telling you. And it's in like Mexico. And look at the images. It is incredibly creepy. And that was the first thing that popped in my head. And honestly, Jess, I kind of want to go there. I'm not going to lie to you and say that I'm not intrigued.
Isla de las Muñecas.
Mm-hmm.
And it is south of Mexico City. It is a tourist attraction, and it is frequently referred to as the Island of the Dead Dolls or the Haunted Dolls. Oh, dear Lord, I hate everything about this.
It's amazing.
No.
But that was what popped in my head. I was like, wait, I've seen this before. You use the dolls, and they're just all over. Just these dolls got there on their own. You can't convince me that they didn't. I have been waiting for something like the zombie equivalent to the Island of Haunted Dolls this entire time, and for me this was the moment. I just felt like I was uncomfortable because they didn't seem scared enough for me. You know, they didn't feel like, I didn't feel like there was enough fear coming off of Negan and Armstrong when they saw the zombie haunted doll shrine, Jess, because this is a thing that happened. I'm telling you, I need to go there.
Honestly, what was missing from the Dead City version of the Haunted Doll Shrine is those dolls looked brand new. Like, these were mint in box dolls taken out of the package and arranged artfully. The Haunted Dolls have seen some stuff.
Right.
They are careworn and weather beaten. And some of them have been out there for a real long time. And I think that to me, like, this is much creepier than what we saw in Dead City.
I saw it and my mind went there because I'm not lying. I kind of want to go. I just feel like not enough people know this exists and it's a real thing and I need to take a picture in front of it or something.
Yeah, I 100% co-sign this. Like, we need to do a podcast field trip.
Yes. I don't know if Josh would come.
I'm pretty sure Josh would not come.
But we can handle it. I'm just saying, Negan did not give me the energy of somebody who had seen that this island of haunted dolls existed. But that was the most terrifying part of the episode for me, because I was like, oh my God, that's the thing. I can't believe you didn't know about it. I got to spread the word more.
Oh my God. Yeah, that's some like Atlas Obscura stuff. And usually I'm all over that. So I never want to go there, but I'm glad I know it exists.
Yes. So if you ever see doll artwork, think the worst.
I will assume the absolute worst. Like, well, I mean, it worked okay for the Beatles. Like, they had a wonderful broken doll part photo shoot that also haunts my nightmares. So I guess there's a long and time honored tradition of the creepy doll scenario.
it worked here, but I don't know if this was supposed to be art or was this something else? You know, like, were we supposed to just be like, oh yeah, that was cool, and just move on? Or was this supposed to be like a sign?
Well, when they encounter this, they even say, like, was this art from the before times, or was this somebody having a breakdown? And mm-hmm. I'm like, it could be art from somebody having a breakdown. That's how we got Vincent Van Gogh.
Yeah, this is art from the today times when this person had a breakdown. It's not out of the question, because look at the world. Why would you not be like this? And then if you need inspiration, you're surrounded by dead bodies. So making a dead baby sculpture is probably not out of the question.
I mean, honestly, I admire the drive to continue creating when the world has gone to pieces. It's honestly admirable. I like this poor dead lady. Like, I salute her. She's probably the best. She was probably the best living artist until she rigged that Rube Goldberg trap to kill herself.
Yeah, but you're right. Imagine being so passionate about something that you even have that to cling to in your last moments before you become a zombie, you know, in this world that is going to fucking, you know, shit, you know, like at this point, you have nothing. Make your art, you know, be happy in those moments. Find the joy in the scary things and in the dark times, because there's not a lot to be happy and joyful about.
I mean, I spent all of 2020 podcasting about television and making art out of things that I podcasted about. So, you know, world was going to shit. I was creating. So I fully understand the impulse, and that's where I'm going to be in the zombie apocalypse. You can find me in the Artist's Enclave on Governor's Island, because I'm not sticking to Manhattan, because these people are idiots for doing that in the first place. I will be in Governor's Island and I will be making art, and you can come join me.
You know, it's a shame that AJ is not here tonight, because AJ being the musical theater aficionado that he is, I wonder if AJ would have found himself with these group of people, because Jess, when they get in here, are these people just like thespians? Are they just like in the wild? Is this what happens when there's no Broadway?
That was definitely not Broadway. I will give you that much. But like, that guy, what that was barely music.
Barely. I was shocked. I didn't know we were going to get there to where this is where all the starving artists have gone to go repopulate the world.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess I will give it to Croat's new boss that she's funding the arts. Like, you know, if you're gonna be a rich person and be a parasite on the world, the least you can do is fund the arts. So good for her for doing that, I guess.
Yes, the Dama is her
name.
La Dama, right?
Yes, the Dama. Yeah,
the Dama. She's wacky. I have so many questions about her.
Because we kind of have three buckets of events this week. We got the got three zombie rat kings to fight here. We got Maggie and Ginny in the sewers. We got Negan and Armstrong at Chelsea Piers. And we got the Croat and the Dama. And so let's just go ahead and we'll, you know, rewind it back and go to the Dama, and we'll start there.
Okay. So the Dama was reading a book. And I believe the book was, I think I put it in my notes. It really bothers me, because I always like try to find like if there's any significance to this. And she was reading Frontiers in Historical Imagination, which from my Google said it's something about like how to start a new world. I was like, oh, look, a scholar. And so I was like, okay, it's clear what she's going to do, right? She's learning from the mistakes of the past, trying to figure out how to keep, you know, repeating some of the atrocities that happened in the world that led us to this point. But then she's like, kind of makes the Croat bend the knee and kiss her like hand. It felt very supremacist, you know? And so I don't know what to think about this lady. Is she the new queen of the world?
Yeah, well, I think it's one of those situations. It's like, this is pretty tropey, honestly. It's like, we think the Croat is the villain, but oh no, the Croat is not the villain. You know, Darth Vader's not the big bad. The Emperor is the big bad. Or Kylo Ren's not the big bad. You know, Snoke is the big bad. Of course, that's a red herring. But I think it's more meant to give you a sense of who the Croat is. Because up to this point, I think I've got on record as saying, I don't really buy him as like the scariest villain who ever villained. And especially when we're going to pit him against Negan, like what is, you know, what are we meant to take from that? Mm-hmm. Because he creates a system to convert zombies to energy, and he really isn't that menacing. Like, he's done a couple of out there things, but I'm not that scared of him. And I think it's really telling that, you know, he doesn't strike me as the type of person who would break away from Negan, like get cast out and then like try to one up Negan. He doesn't seem mm-hmm. like that kind of guy. He really is just a dog looking for someone to hold his leash. He's second in command. He's always going to be the vice president. He doesn't want to be the president.
Right. Do you think he could live up to, I mean, if the Croat is in a sense our, you know, the scariest villain, blah, 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 or whatever. He's very menacing, XYZ, but he is the second in command. Is this a situation where the first in command, the La Dama, is she supposed to be worse than him? Like, The Walking Dead proper, right, where we had Hornsby, right? That was his mm-hmm. name, right? And yep. then we had, yeah, and it was like he's the villain, but then after he was gone, there was just like there was no villain. Like,
yeah, it was a power vacuum.
Yeah, like yeah. The she wasn't the governor. What was her title?
She was the governor, Pamela.
Yeah.
Governor
Pamela. Pamela. Yeah, Pamela is the new bad guy at that point. But Pamela was nothing on Hornsby. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, I feel like we might be in a situation like that again.
It's like being told, okay, Dick Cheney is gone and your villain is George W. Bush. Like, really?
Right.
Okay.
It's like, bring back Cheney. Yeah. Yeah. Cheney was, yeah. Cheney, if you wanted to scare me, you should have kept that guy around.
Yeah, no kidding. So I really do not think the Croat is a Cheney situation. I don't find him terribly scary. I think he's really like, he's very much more of a like Spiro Agnew kind of dude. Like kind of not something to write home about, probably sort of bad, but the real bad guy is the guy in charge. And I actually, honestly, I don't know. We don't have enough of information on the Dama at this point to really get a feel for, like, she might think that some of the Croat's tactics are okay. And tacitly approving some of the weird stuff he gets up to makes her pretty bad, but it's possible like she just keeps him around because he'll do the weird stuff nobody else will.
Mm-hmm. And they have this plan to get Negan to come to them because of what? I don't know. Maybe that's something they're going to answer in the next episode, but as of right now, she's very intent on getting Negan specifically to help them. And I'm not quite sure what unique skill set. I mean, Negan's crazy. We know that. But Negan was also, as we were reminded, a gym teacher. You know, it's not like Negan, you know, went to the League of Shadows or something like that and survived Ra's al Ghul or something like that. You know, he's just a gym teacher who has anger issues. Why him? Why Negan? Why is this so important? What are we talking about here when it comes to La Dama and her plan?
Well, I think it's something that, and again, I've seen all six episodes. It was like a month ago at this point. I have been rewatching them as we come back to talk about them. It is something that they do try to explain in the next episode, so I don't want to go too far down that road, but I mm-hmm. think a lot of the lessons we take from The Walking Dead are around, it doesn't matter who you were in the before times. It only matters like what you can make of yourself in this terrible world and like what terrible lengths are you willing to go to. It's just like, okay, Rick Grimes, small town cop.
Yeah. And
you can't tell me that we would have enjoyed hanging out with, like, I don't want to watch the show about Rick Grimes in the before times.
No.
Although that's a great title.
Rick Grimes in the before times.
It totally rhymes.
It's almost like they have a bunch of spinoffs coming and they can totally use that.
Yeah, I think we'll probably get something like that. Or, you know, Michonne was a lawyer. Like, I don't need the Michonne procedural drama. And again, I don't need like Abbott Elementary with Negan as the gym teacher.
Yeah. Michonne attorney at law would be kind of dope.
Law and Order Michonne.
Yeah, she's got the sword, but like it's in the corner of the room, she doesn't touch it, and people always ask about it. you know, like, are you going to use that? She's like, maybe, you know, but then she goes back to doing law stuff.
She's like, that's the sword of justice.
Yes, exactly. She's a vigilante as well. Like, so she's a lawyer, but then at night she dishes out her own crime. We might have to take our own spin off this time.
You know, I feel like it's really not a Pusha Recaps Walking Dead recap if we don't come up with at least five ideas for shows that are better than anything currently on the air.
It's like, let's talk about The Walking Dead and then also change The Walking Dead and say that we did it better.
Yeah, that's why we podcast. So we can sit at home in the comfort of our own homes, risking nothing and pretending that we're better. So I think it'll be a little more clear, like what the whole point of all of this Negan is, but it does actually, there's a few questions that are answered in this episode in very subtle, small ways that it's almost like you blink and you miss it.
Okay.
And so, one of those things is like, how do we get set on this path in the first place? You see this flashback of Maggie running into the Croat and the Croat like holding up the wanted poster, like, you know, I'll give you your kid back. You got to get me this. But there's something that the entire series hinges on that they kind of gloss over in episode one. And then they lay a tiny trail out in subsequent episodes. And then it's supposed to come to a head this episode. Like specifically, we got an email from AMC saying, you may not discuss any of this stuff until after the episode airs. And this is supposed to be a big reveal. And it's such a nothing burger the way they drop it on us. And namely, in episode one, when Maggie is making her case to Negan, she says, the Croat came to our settlement, they took Herschel, they took all of our grain and all of our good stuff, and we need to get Herschel back, and we also need to save our community, and the entire health of my community is riding on this, so I need you, Negan, to help me with this. And we come to find out in this episode that it's actually not what happened at all. It is Herschel is being held for ransom and the price is Negan.
Yeah.
And there's not even any actual grain in this story at all, because all the grain is sitting back at New Hilltop or whatever the place is called. And this also kind of backwardly explains why Ginny is there in the first place, because they left Ginny at Maggie's safe, happy community. They start feeding her bread and she's like, wait a minute, I thought all your grain got taken. What is this bread? Oh, Maggie is lying to Negan. I have to go get Negan. It wasn't just that I like this guy too much. Mm-hmm. And all of this comes together in such a like blink and you'll miss it way this episode. I feel like I needed a heavier hand with this part of the story.
I totally agree. I saw all the things that you're talking about, but it's just now occurring to me that, yeah, it was the bread that tipped off Ginny because of the lack of grain. And Maggie never stopped lying. You know, there's a moment where Ginny tries to make a run for it. There's several moments where Ginny tries to make a run for it, to be fair. And Maggie, you know, corners her and hits her with the, look, the bad guy came. He took our grain. I need Negan to get my kid back. It's all about my kid. And Ginny's like, oh, I got it. I understand. And then the next thing you know, she's writing liar on the wall in blood. And, whose blood? I guess her blood? But yeah,
probably right? Walker blood.
Can you just like siphon that out for ink? I don't know. But she's just like playing with Walker blood, but she makes sure she tells Maggie, like, I know you lying. I know you're lying. And that's when I was like, oh, okay, cool. Because this does put the entire series in perspective. It's just that, like you said, it was very subtle. Because the story of the series so far of Dead City has always been, you could think somebody's a bad guy. You really can. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, people have their reasons for doing horrible stuff. Negan had his reasons for doing horrible stuff. Tommaso turned, threw everybody on the bus to do his thing. Maggie has killed multiple people in the past because of her need to keep her family safe. We've seen Rick Grimes bite a dude's neck off. You know, you can do bad things to protect, like, in the greater good, or, you know, protect your people or whatever like that in The Walking Dead. And we talk about it so much because it feels like they're trying to humanize Negan to Maggie. When all along, they're trying to show Maggie that you ain't no better than anybody else. You know, it's like it humanizes Negan, but it dehumanizes Maggie in a way. I'm like, well, Maggie, you've been doing all this lying and stuff like that when really you just selfish like Tommaso, you know, you know better than the rest of them. And I think it took her a long time to get there. I think a lot of Rick Grimes' crew could use that conversation as well. But Maggie is the one getting a crash course in that right now. And it did come out subtly in this episode. But not enough to where AMC should be telling us, like, okay, don't talk about this. I just didn't think it was that, like you said, heavy-handed.
I mean, it is a masterful, like, plotting-wise. This is such a great story to tell. I needed it to be a little bit bigger. In fact, everything this episode, I needed to be a little bit bigger. Like, I want to turn the volume up on this, especially when we are being so unsubtle with our zombie rat kings. Yes. I need the story to be up there at an 11 to match the complete extraness that was this. But you're absolutely right. Like, this is the theme of the Walking Dead. Like, Negan is a villain who is trying to be better and has told himself for so long, like the story of him being a villain. And Maggie has told herself that she is the good guy for so long, but she is really, like, they are two sides of the same coin. She is no better than he is. And she's done some really, she's not above doing really underhanded, awful things to get what she wants.
Mm-hmm. And she, like, the show humanizes Negan for us as well. But the humanization of Negan to Maggie is the incredible part here, because that's why she's now starting to, we're getting those flashbacks. Mm-hmm. Because if she still hated Negan, like she hated Negan, like because he killed Glenn, I'll never let it go. I told you, I support that 100%. But you, when you go and you're like, okay, the guy who killed the love of my life and like ruined my entire civilization or whatever, you want him? Fine. I'll go get him. Whatever. No skin off my back. Here you go. But then when he starts talking about, you know, for you to look at me like that, and not look at yourself like that, not look at these other people like the way they're acting, and then like if everybody's acting in their own best interest and selfishly, then yeah, people are falling at our hands. And now Maggie's starting to see him like, oh, okay, yeah, maybe I should start to feel bad because he didn't do anything that we would not have done, probably. Maybe not as gruesome, but make no mistake, you know, Rick Grimes has turned plenty of people away and left them for dead in the past. Maggie was a part of all of that as well. So yeah. It's finally starting to creep up on her. That guilt of, I was about to throw Negan to the wolves, and I don't care who died while I did it. All these other people are dying because they're with Maggie. So she herself was the reason why Tommaso even had the plan to give up their location in the first place. So, you know, Maggie, it's kind of like it's dragging her slowly off her high horse. And now it's making me as a viewer look at her as like an anti-hero in a way. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I think it's almost like they're being pulled from opposite ends and they're going to meet in the anti-hero middle.
Yes. Yeah. Because it would take a lot to get Maggie and Negan on the same level as far as villainy goes. But if you do look at it, like as all the deaths and the that we've seen since Maggie and Negan have come to this area of New York have all been byproducts of Maggie and this mission. Then yeah, Maggie has a trail of bodies as long as Negan's, if not longer, probably. And so who knows? But I think that this is the best way of kind of getting them on a level playing field. And I didn't think that was possible.
Yeah, it's amazing that we've gotten there and we're pretty close to it. And we are only 5 episodes into this thing. So, you know, at the end of the 6th episode, they're probably going to be there.
Yeah, to where you're like, well, yeah, now y'all even. Or if y'all not even, I can't put anything past you like I can't put anything past him, and that's okay. You know, there's no moral compass that is leading Maggie. Matter of fact, Negan probably has more of one because he's always like, I couldn't do this to a child. You know, we don't know Maggie's limitations. We don't.
We do not.
Yeah, and if it's for Herschel, I have to believe that some childs would die at the hands of this entire mission to save Herschel. And I'm not judging her for that, but she definitely needs to start taking a hard look at herself and thinking about herself as not the hero of this story. Maybe she's the hero of her story.
I mean, we've already seen she's willing to burn a stuffed dinosaur.
That's true. And if you would do that, you'd do anything. This was such a ride, Jess. Even the moments where they're down in the sewer and we see Tommaso's betrayal, right, where he pulls out, where we learn about him having the mask and the tanks and stuff in his bag, and Maggie's able to suss him out. You're still Team Maggie at that point. Like, look at Maggie, like being able to see through these people and their lies and their scheming. It's like, but that's because she's probably one of the best at it. She's doing it as well, and nobody knows it.
Game recognized game, man.
That part. So I was happy without watching it, knowing the end of the story. I think the story plays a little bit better, even probably on a rewatch.
Yeah, I honestly think it does. Mm-hmm. Like, having that, like, I binged it all over the course of one afternoon so that I could write a review of the whole season for Variety. And then I sort of forgot about it, and I've come back to it weekly and episodically. I would say this plays better episodically than it does on a binge. And like being able to kind of unwrap it piece by piece, like opening it up as if it is a 3-year-old letter from my brother, and get these little details that I might have missed the first time around, it's definitely a much better way to unpack this series. And I think it's the exact right size for what it has to be. And again, like, I feel like they're a little bit too subtle with some of this stuff, but you know, we've also complained that this show hits us over the head with stuff sometimes. So I guess we're getting to, you know, we're pulling in an opposite direction now. We'll get to the happy medium, like maybe with whatever the next thing is.
Right. Watching Negan try so hard to save Armstrong, who is an asshole, you know, who will not, for the life of me, I don't know why, but he just is not letting this Negan thing go. He's like, look, you're saving my life, but I'm still going to take you down. And he's like, why are you acting like this? And Negan's still fighting the good fight to keep this man around and alive. And Maggie's doing a full heel turn on the other end of the island. It's very cool.
Yeah, it's super cool. I would say, like, this whole, I'm sure we've made the parallel before, but the whole, like, Armstrong-Negan dynamic, it just smacks of The Fugitive. Like, he's just giving Tommy Lee Jones, like, I didn't kill my wife. I don't care.
Exactly. I'm over that. This is on principle at this point.
Yeah, it is. But I want to talk about Tommaso and his little ruse here, because I think it's an interesting character note, because this guy is fully willing to lose, like, every single one of his people just because the Croat made up some stuff about going to a place with bricks. Like, he's very committed to the bricks.
Yeah. What is this about? You know, Maggie says some stuff, the Croat says some stuff, and Tommaso's like, look, I just have to save Amaya. I don't care whatever happens here, but I got it. There gotta be something better than this. But I don't know. You know, you get all these fairy tales about, oh, life is better over there. They have this, they have that. He's like, yeah, I don't want to live in here anymore. I don't want to do this anymore. Let's try our best to get over there to where things are nicer. And I don't know. I could tell he was gone. You know, like, immediately when they revealed the tanks, I'm like, oh, we're losing Tommaso here. I wasn't expecting us to lose Amaya as well. Not so quickly. So that was actually a plot twist that I wasn't expecting.
Yeah, that was a genuine shock that they were going to go that quickly. I mean, as soon as somebody starts talking about there's got to be a better place than this, like, that's when you know they're going to die.
Yeah.
But I didn't think they would go, like, within seconds of each other in such a stupid way. Honestly, justice for Zombie Rat King. He has no casualties to his name.
No, he's done nothing wrong. He really hasn't, because these people laying on top of the zombies, that's a self-inflicted wound.
Yeah, like, that's really, like, that's Darwin in action there. but I feel like Zombie Rat King could have been much more effective if he's gotten to eat somebody. Like, also, I want to know, like, what happens when he does eat somebody, because what is his digestive tract like?
Well,
come on. Because he's got a head coming out of his stomach. Where's his stomach? Where's it going? Like, if you're going to eat something, where's it going to go?
Is that where we get more of these? This is the coolest zombie that I've seen so far. I mean, even I love my zombie catapult, you know, the exploding zombies. Those are cool. But this is pretty dope. I feel like we'd be wasting it to only get it one time.
Yeah. Like, I understand practical effects are expensive. But this was too cool to waste on, like, oh, it might kill Maggie. And 30 seconds later, she has dispatched all of its many heads and we will never see it again. That's a waste. Like, they really should have had Zombie Rat King come up and eat Tommaso. Like, give it for its last meal. It deserved Tommaso.
Yeah, it needed to be it needs to have a moment, you know, because we will talk about Zombie Rat King. You and I will keep this. We will keep the Zombie Rat King's memory alive, but it didn't have a memorable moment. It just like, it was like, oh, that's a crazy thing they did. And then it was gone. And I really think that you could have made this your mini boss for the episode. You know, he's up there like coming after you, and then you have to figure out a way to kill all of it. Like, very Hercules and Hydra type, you know, moment or something like that. I feel like you could have given us more with him. So you're right. Justice for the Zombie Rat King. I didn't think I'd be saying that.
Yeah. Or I feel like that's not something you can kill by yourself. You need to have, like, I feel like Maggie should have been on the brink of death from Zombie Rat King, and Jenny should have turned around and like killed its last head and then run off and left the note, liar. Like, I'm better than you because I will save you from the Zombie Rat King, when you clearly don't give a crap about anybody except yourself and the people around you.
Jenny's
the Zombie Rat King should have been a plot point, and really, like, it's like, you know, it's like Indiana Jones and Raiders of the Lost Ark. You lift Zombie Rat King out of the story, and it still makes complete sense, and nothing has changed.
Mm-hmm. I need Zombie Rat King, the urban legend, you know, where maybe the Croat says something like, deep in the sewer, you know, there's a Zombie Rat King. Everybody's like, oh, you're crazy, that Croat. And it's just a throwaway line. And then all of a sudden, four episodes later, Maggie finds it, you know, and then it's like, it just comes full circle. I just feel like the concept was so good. It's absurd, but whatever. We've done worse.
Yeah. Zombie Rat King's not real. He can't hurt you. And then boom. There's Zombie Rat King. There's no payoff. This is just a thing that happened to Maggie in the sewers, and he deserved so much better.
Yeah, it does exist, you know, and I would like that. But to your point about Jenny, she is legit sick of Maggie. Like, she is done with her. She left her for dead. And I remember sitting there thinking, dang, Jenny, like, this woman has been going out of her way to try to save you, and you just left her for dead. And now you're calling her a liar? What's that about? And then the flashbacks kick in. I was like, oh, okay, never mind, Jenny. Yeah, get out of there, Jenny.
Jenny's got a point, actually. Like, yeah. I'm surprised she even paused to leave a note, because that's more than Maggie deserved.
Yeah. Jess, are we rooting for Negan now?
I don't know if I'm rooting for anybody in this situation. Like, I'm rooting for certain people to lose. Like, I specifically do not want the Croat to get anything.
Right.
I do not want Armstrong. I guess I could say I'm rooting for Negan because I don't want Armstrong to collect his bounty.
Correct.
Certainly don't want that. I don't want anything bad to happen to Herschel. So maybe I'm rooting for Maggie in that sense. But maybe I'm just team kids. Like, we are very much team kids on this podcast almost all the time. Almost. Like, ever since Henry, we've been team kids.
Pretty much. I guess I kind of rooted for Negan a little bit. Like, I do not want Maggie to be successful. That is not a thing that I would like. I'm sorry. Because if her goal is to turn in Negan for Herschel, if you ask me on the show, I'd rather have Negan than Herschel at this point, for just television purposes. We don't get a lot of Herschel content. But yeah, I don't see a world where they still coexist. I didn't see a world where they coexisted before this. And that's just because Negan had such a clear upper hand on Maggie, as far as the amount of damage he'd done to her life, that now Maggie taking you on this basically a wild goose chase to turn you in, so she get Herschel back, it does kind of square things. But also, I don't want Negan to forgive Maggie for something like that, because who's to say Maggie's forgiving you, Negan? You at some point, you guys are thinking about yourself, and I think Negan said it. I don't think Maggie's ever going to truly forgive him. So how do we get a Dead City season two if Maggie and Negan can't ever get on the same page? Are they just hunting each other forever?
I mean, honestly, it would be worse if they did get on the same page. Like, season two of Dead City would blow goats if we got them on the same page. This is like classic will they or won't they. I'm not even talking about them romantically hooking up, but that's the vibe. It's like, will they or won't they? After they do, the show always sucks. It's always bad. don't let them get on the same page. You have to have that tension. And the best written shows are the ones that can play off that tension for multiple seasons. And I think I have faith, like, most of this season has been so good. I have faith they can continue to do it. And they, especially if they leave us at a point where Negan's fate in the hands of the Croat and Croat's boss, if they leave that where that's a little bit uncertain, I think we set ourselves up for a season two that would be very satisfying.
I think Maggie has to kill Jenny. I think that's the thing that really just, like, with an ice pick, just, you know, draws a line in the sand that there's just no way that they could ever get on the same page. Because, yeah, it does feel like, again, that that's something that Negan probably has coming to him just because he cares so much about Jenny and Maggie cared so much about Glenn. We get that. But in order for this tension to remain at this level, because it is kind of, I think it's honestly decreasing because of, you know, Maggie realizing that she's no better than Negan in a lot of ways. And I think Negan logically will be able to see that as well. I think we need another conflict. I think we need another good, healthy, you know, something that Negan can't overlook, because we know he's for the kids too, you know? And so if Maggie does something despicable like that, you know, and a child is the one who falls, you know, prey to that, I think Negan looks at Maggie completely differently. And now you have two people who, I mean, despise each other, and not the dynamic where one despises the other and the other one is trying to get her forgiveness in a weird way.
Yeah. I mean, arguably, is it enough if Negan finds out that the entire point of everything he's been doing this season was so Maggie could sell him out to the Croat? Is that enough? I think the show is trying to suggest that it is, but I think you're right. I think Maggie needs to go a step further.
Yeah, and this is kind of bad, but do we think Negan's... I think Negan's a little bit too savvy to fall for this. I'm kind of like not even believing that Negan fully believes Maggie. You know, like, it just feels like, yeah, Maggie's got a good little scam going, but Negan's always managed to be one step ahead, and he's so savvy, and he can pick up on stuff that I, you know, a lot of people in the Walking Dead community and the world haven't seen, you know, or stuff. Negan is a superpowered gym teacher, you know? So for whatever that means, I'm shocked that Maggie has been able to pull the wool over his eyes for so long.
Well, has he gone a little bit soft? Like, he's had about 5 years where we don't really know what he's been up to. And it sounds like up until the point where he killed those dudes, he was doing all right.
Yeah.
Mm. So it's possible that some of his savvy has sort of fallen off. And, you know, he's not always had the best read on people. Like, the whole reason that the sanctuary falls is because Negan brings in Eugene and believes everything Eugene does, which is wild.
Wild. Wild. To be fair, everybody believed Eugene at one point or another, and that was just a flaw on everybody's point. Looking back, we all should be ashamed of ourselves.
Yep.
But yeah, you're right. The Eugene thing is a misstep. I don't know. It just feels like Maggie and Negan's stories are so intertwined, you know, and I guess that's maybe just from these last five episodes, they've given me a good... like, they really drilled that into me. Maybe I didn't feel like that before. But now I feel like when Maggie makes a weird move, Negan's supposed to be able to see that. And vice versa. They're supposed to be able to kind of suss each other out there. You give him... You're not being 100% right now. And you're probably right. Negan has let his guard down to the point where he's so soft in those ways, or he's so soft by the atrocities of what happened to Maggie and Glenn and all that stuff that at his hands, that maybe he's just not paying attention. It's invisible to him. I just want to know how Jenny is going to explain that to him if she won't open her damn mouth.
I think, well, the fact that Jenny doesn't open her mouth by choice rather than by circumstance, I think there's certainly room for her to have a Silent Bob moment.
Yeah. To just spit it out. Just say it. Because she shoots the flare. And I'm assuming Negan's going to chase the flare and figure out where she is. Maggie as well is going to be chasing after the flare to figure out where she is. But if Jenny's initial reaction is, Negan, run, get out of here, Maggie's crazy, she's lying, then, you know, what are we doing here? She's got to spit it out.
Yeah, I mean, I think he would definitely believe her, especially especially given that she hasn't said anything. Like, she's not going to talk until it's important.
Mm-hmm. Breaking her vow of silence. It's got to mean something to her at that point.
Yeah, it's definitely something.
Mm-hmm.
I have some small things that I noticed this episode. I love the Croat's car with the spikes on the front. The way he just like goes over the top of that zombie was fantastic.
Yes.
There was a point where I feel like Tommaso gets tripped by the zombies. At the mm-hmm. moment of his death, there's a smart zombie in the pile of zombies, because that zombie trips him fully, like, just like sweeps the leg. And I loved that because it was a throwback to like the zombies climbing ladders and the zombies opening doors. And this zombie is smart enough that they can like yank your feet out from under you. I thought that was fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Tommaso had it coming.
Yeah, he definitely had it coming. Negan had the best line of the episode about the ass hairs on the dingleberry, because that's a classic Negan line.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think. There's got to be more. Oh, yes. When they are at Chelsea Piers and they're inside the building and they walk up to the exit and the exit is boarded up and it says, "Do not open, dead outside."
Yes.
That was classic.
I enjoyed a lot of those moments. The car thing, him yelling like that. The Croat just yelling like in frustration when he can't catch Negan, but he's like is screaming into the steering wheel. Like, you don't see that on The Walking Dead often. We don't act as though this is something you see on I-35 here in Texas. You know, somebody's just in so much frustration by these bad drivers that all you can do is scream. The Croat's fun. He's really a fun character. I really hate that he's not going to survive this. So I really hate that we're going to lose him soon. I just don't see a world where we get the Croat moving forward. But I mean, if they could just keep him around for just a little bit longer, I think it'd be fun.
Yeah, well, I guess that brings me into my next question for you, Chappelle, is who do you think makes it out of next week alive? Like, do we have like a death draft for next week?
Yeah, we kind of have to do the death draft. I really enjoy doing these things because I like to see, you know, what we're thinking as far as what we can do moving forward with certain characters. Honestly, I think everybody can go except for Maggie and me. You know, I thought about it, and like the idea of keeping Jenny around, keep the Croat would be fun to keep around, but we don't have to do that. I just feel like if you take the Croat away, we need just a future wacky character like the Croat. I don't think you move away from that well of villain. I think you just continue getting cartoonishly ridiculous villains the entire time. Like when Daryl Dixon gets to France, I need him to be like the most Pepe Le Pew villain of all. You know, like I just need him to be the most French, you know, human that ever existed. And I need to be a caricature. No disrespect to all the French people listening to this, but I need to be a caricature of what a French person is. He needs to be wearing a beret. You know, like I need these things to be as wacky as possible. So I'm fine losing the Croat. LaDama, we just met her. But I still think that you could wrap this up. I mean, she doesn't seem like she has like an original thought. Like it's not, you know, I have a plan that no one else has. It's basically keep the outside people out. Keep mm-hmm. the inside people in. You know, that's not out of the ordinary here on The Walking Dead. And then the question is Jenny. Do I care if Jenny still sticks around? No, I already told you. I want Maggie to kill her. So for me, give me Maggie Negan season 2 with just Maggie and Negan. Again, start over. Wipe the slate clean. Give us something else.
What if all of Walking Dead Dead City, what if it goes for 10 seasons and every season, everybody except Maggie and Negan dies at the last episode?
I'd like it. I think that gives us something new to do. Like we could bet on the order in which these people die or how they die. Because after a while, The Walking Dead very much became that. It was like, we know Rick Grimes ain't going to die. And then when Rick was gone, we knew Maggie wasn't going nowhere. Negan wasn't going nowhere. Carol wasn't going nowhere. Daryl wasn't going nowhere. You know what I'm saying? So it's just a smaller group. But it's still the same concept. We gotta have all these deaths, but none of them are gonna matter. Because ultimately, the two people that we've known from the before times are going to be the ones who outlast everyone.
Yeah, I think Herschel has to stay alive too, because I feel like Herschel dies, like that's when Maggie goes full Sith. She has nothing to live for anymore at that point, and there's no place, like there's no place for her to go back to.
Yeah,
like, that makes her character irredeemable, and I think we always need to have like a spark of good in the evil or a spark of evil in the good. You can't be fully one thing or the other. And she goes full evil if Herschel bites it.
Could the show work if Maggie is the big bad?
I don't know if the show could work if Maggie is the big bad. I think it is too much of a, I think it's going to be too much of a stretch for the fans to not ever be able to root for her even a little bit. And not even in like the ironic way that people rooted for Negan when he first came on the scene, like, oh, he's so bad, I love him. I think we've spent too much time with Maggie for her to make a full heel turn. And, you know, they've tried to do this with, you know, our much beloved Fear the Walking Dead. They tried to take an existing character and make him the villain, and it never fully landed.
They just gave up. And I think they forgot they did that, too.
Yeah,
because we haven't seen that man. We haven't seen these people. Matter of fact, they've done it several times. God knows what Daniel's doing on Fear half the time. And Strand as well. You know, it's like, what are y'all doing here? And how do we just keep coming back from this person being the big bad? If Strand can come back from being the big bad, I don't think Maggie doesn't have it in her to do that. You know, I think if Maggie goes full bad, then she continues the series as the big bad, and we're watching her do evil stuff from her, you know, ivory tower. Like she's, and then Negan would have to be the good guy at that point.
Yeah, well, I think the problem is that you always kind of want the, I don't think there's any universe in which everybody, like the point of the series is that you're rooting for the moment when Maggie dies. I don't think we get there. I just can't see it happening. Like, not after everything we've been through with Maggie. I think it's always going to be gray. It's got to be a little bit gray on both sides of this equation.
Huh. You have Maggie, who will now take over Bricktown or whatever it's called. And she's finally just, you know, she drank the Kool-Aid. I am now the queen of Bricktown. I'm keeping everybody out. Nobody comes in here. Negan shows up with his family, the baby as well, I think is still the thing. Yeah, he shows up with them. Right. And Maggie's like, no, you can't get in. And Negan says, Maggie, I know you're better than this. You can snap out of this, Maggie. You don't have to be like this. And she's like, I actually do have to be like this now. And then the plot is Negan has to not kill Maggie, but transform her back into the Maggie he once knew. Maybe that works.
He has to redeem Maggie.
Yes. He has to bring her back into the light.
Yep. The point at which, like, maybe he has to be the one to bring back Herschel. Like, after Maggie double-crosses him, after the Croat double-crosses Maggie, then Negan and Herschel have to get each other out of the predicament, and it's only by retrieving Herschel that Negan is able to save Maggie from ultimate damnation.
Right, exactly. That's what I'm saying. There's something here, because if we're not going to lose Maggie or Negan, let's spice it up. Let's see how many different iterations of this partnership that we can get. Because, you know, the double cross thing that's happening right now, it's cute. Mm-hmm. Well, you could do more.
Yeah. Certainly, like, if there's another, if it goes a little bit deeper, like, everybody is double crossing everybody at this point. I want to see it. I want to see more layers on it. I want to see, like, what you didn't know is that, like, I want the end of Clue. I want full-fledged, like, what he said that I said that you didn't know that he knew that I knew that you knew. I want all of that. Mm-hmm. And I think we can get there in a way that makes sense. I think there's enough here. There's enough potential. Like, if we get a second season of this, I think it could be very, very fun.
Yeah, I agree.
So is there anything else we want to touch on before we start to wrap things up tonight, Chappelle?
No, that was fun. Like I said, it was a fun episode. I'm kind of jealous that you and AJ had already binged it all, because like y'all know what I am now anticipating. And I mean, honestly, I could just go watch it, I guess, after this. But, you know, I'm very excited to talk about the finale and then to start to look forward at future The Walking Dead projects, because we're not done. The Walking Dead, my Dead City is about to be over, but we are just getting started here. And so I'm actually really enjoying my time podcasting about this season. And yeah, I have no notes. I think this has been a really good time.
Yeah, it's fun stuff. So what else are you up to in podcast world?
I will be joining Rob and Sasha to talk about the finale of Below Deck very soon. Below Deck Selling Yacht on Bravo. They're doing a two-part reunion and a premiere of the next Below Deck, which I think is like Voyage or whatever. I don't know. There's a lot of them. I'll be checking out one of them and talking about them with Rob and Sasha very soon. Here on Postman Recaps, Ariel and I are still talking about Grey's Anatomy. And then on Nothing But Netflix, Rob and I just talked about Quarterback, the new Peyton Manning Netflix documentary about NFL quarterbacks. And we had Alexander Chester on as our guest, and that was a good time as well. But people can just follow me on Twitter for, I guess, the time being. As long as Twitter is a thing, you can follow me on Twitter at Chappelle's_show to keep up with whatever else I got going on.
Yeah, I'm gonna sit on my hands and wait for the next Twitter to show itself, because I don't know what that's gonna be. I've gotten the Mastodon, I've gotten the threads. I'm gonna get Blue Sky eventually. I'm sure I'll be the last person to get it. Whatever the thing is, I'll wind up on it eventually. But right now, the thing is still sadly Twitter. You can find me on Twitter at HeyBakerHattie, and I've had a busy week, Chappelle. A lot of podcasting going on. Earlier today, I talked to Mike Bloom, and this will be in your feeds already because I believe it is in the feeds. Turnaround is very quick on this. We talked about Star Trek Strange New Worlds, and I believe they're on episode 5 as well, and it's good stuff. We had a lot of fun talking about that. And then I talked with Mike Bloom and Rob Sestrino every week about Tough as Nails, which you'll find that over on robswebsite.com. And then the great Dan Heaton and I are talking Amazing Race Canada, which has been very fun so far. And we're looking forward to recapping episode 2 later in the week. And that will be dropping in your feeds over on reality show wrap ups, reality TV wrap ups. Sorry.
Yes.
It's late. And I guess that about wraps it up for us. Just about any scripted show you can think of, we are covering it over on Post Show Recaps. So please check out our feeds and check out our website for all that good stuff. Support us on Patreon for all the great perks. Thank you very much to Chappelle for showing up, and to our dear comrades in absentia, AJ Mass and Josh Wiggler, and some combination of the four of us. We'll be back here to recap the finale next week. Until then, everybody, have a great week. See you then.